Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. On demand. Brady and Walker. Now. 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 TV. Sportsnet 360. Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 o'clock hour, Brady and Walker. Thanks for finding us. We appreciate it. You appreciate us and we appreciate you. It's all mutual. So there we all were in Southern Ontario 22 years ago tonight. I'll never forget where I was. And then I'll never forget where I was for game seven. It was game six, though. Maple Leafs, Los Angeles Kings, 1993 Western Conference Finals. The Maple Leafs are coming off an OT win in game five, heading into the Great Western Forum. Look, there they are at the Great Western Forum. Continuing a magical playoff ride, right? Seven-game win over the Red Wings, the Borshevsky goal, seven-game win over the St. Louis Blues, and they are playing game number 20. And then it happens. The Kings down a goal, and it looks obvious to all on TV, low definition back then. Wayne Gretzky high stick Doug Gilmore. Carey Fraser saw it, looking right at it. No call. Gretzky gets the tying goal. They win the game, and then the great one has an amazing performance on the road at Maple Leaf Gardens in Game 7. Lots of Leaf memories. That is 22 years ago. And yes, Lanny McDonald's goal in 78 was great, and all those wins over the Senators, great, 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 because there were a lot of them. But is this still, post-67, the most memorable moment? You're inches away, an arm raised in the air away from going on and playing the Montreal Canadiens in a modern-day Stanley Cup final in 1993, and maybe you could have won. It's hard to believe it's 22 years ago. Still unforgettable.
Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360. Sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Brady and Walker, our 2 o'clock hour. This was apparently the number one song 22 years ago when the Kings
don't know it.
Beat
Born
the
on
Leafs.
Blondes. What's up with that? No, that's Kenan Thompson on Saturday Night Live.
All right, so
what's going on?
I'll play the role of everyone. I want to say 32 years and younger.
How old were you in '93? It's okay.
10. Nine or 10.
I was finishing third year of university at Western.
I'm going to play the role of anyone in their early 30s and younger is driving around or sitting on their couch today and yelling into their television saying, Leafs Bruins game 7 is the most memorable. You're an idiot. Although.
Spelled Y-O-U-R.
You're an idiot. I do agree with you. I mean, I remember where I was 22 years ago watching that game, and I was not in Southern Ontario, but Leafs and Kings, so close to a Toronto-Montreal final, which seems unbelievable, and it's literally impossible today. The Gretzky in Game 6, and then the Gretzky at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Oh, what heavens.
He calls his single greatest single-game performance of all time
going
in Game 7.
Off Dave Ellett's skate,
sure.
Pucks going in off Felix Potvin's shoulder. Like, I don't know how people felt. I'm trying to gauge the feeling. We can do that. 416-870-0590, *590, or 888-666-0590. Two questions. I'd love to know, because we won't talk about this on Friday, the anniversary of Game 7. We're doing it now. The Leafs Game 6, is it the most memorable, not happy, doesn't have to be happy, most memorable game that sticks in your craw for the Leafs post-1967? We are 48 years into this now. 48, okay? And how did people feel going into Game 7? Still confident? You're still at home. Felix Potvin was fine. It wasn't like he was going out-dueled by Kelly Rudy. Kelly might be listening. They were both playing well and both stole at least one game in the series. 416-870-0590, *590. And, Andrew, you make a great point because it's probably your age may factor in, but there's
been
plenty.
It's a generational thing. There's no doubt about
every
it.
Every 16-year-old, every 12-year-old with a cell phone can go Google Carey, and they probably have. Every Leafs fan who's a kid goes to Google's Carey Fraser, Wayne Gretzky, Doug Gilmore, and they already seen it. Don brings it up every year on Coach's Corner around the time it happens because he was incensed about it at the time. There was, you know, talk of, you know, where's the X-Files music? League-wide conspiracy. Ooh, got to get Gretzky to the finals. And I'm thinking, they don't want Toronto in the finals. that's not good for the league to have Toronto in the finals? I don't know.
It was an unbelievable moment. And, I mean, I'm trying to think. The Boston Game 7, and again, it's the only playoff series in recent memory. It's certainly the most recent, and it's probably the most heartbreaking. Like, your heart was ripped out of your chest if you're a Leafs fan by Wayne Gretzky in 1993. But no one will ever forget when you're talking about memorable. And it was only the first round. I know that. But no one will ever forget the feeling that they had. Again, if you are a Leafs fan, knowing that, boy, like, Toronto's going to the second round. Not maybe, not, oh, if they hold on. This series is over.
I guess
they're going to the second round and then having, you know, the bottom fall.
I guess they're 1-2, and we're showing it right now, and people are like, "Honey, do we have a rifle around the house that I can fire into the television?" I think it's 1-2. I'm pretty sure it's 1-2 because there've been moments and big goals and like I said, advancements in series. Gilmore's Freudian slip. Gilmore's goal against St. Louis to win the overtime game one was so early in that series in 93, but nobody will ever forget it, or the Borshevsky goal,
sure.
The Foligno goal in overtime in game five. There were so many moments, but those are the two that well, probably leap off the page for people, and they're both losses.
You know, I've relayed this story before on the air, so I read this article, and it's basically on gambling addiction, and the basis of why people are addicted, like we're talking problem Las Vegas gamblers, and there's been movies on this and stuff, but basically the theory was you're not addicted to the unbelievable feeling you get when you win a bunch of money, like when your team covers or you hit the thing on the roulette wheel or you come up with 21 or the dealer bus. That's not what you're addicted to. What you're addicted to, like the feeling you can't duplicate, and we're talking like an adrenaline rush. The feeling you can't duplicate is the sickening feeling in the pit of your stomach, and I hope you've never gone through it, when you know, like, it's snake eyes or you bust or the roulette wheel comes up black instead of red, and you know you've lost more than you can afford to lose.
I got to read that passage. I need to read that passage to think it's
but
that.
But not like, oh, man, I might be behind on my rent. You know you've screwed yourself. Like, that's what, in a weird way, it's what you're addicted to. And it was heartbreak 22 years ago against the LA Kings, but there was a lot of good in that, right? Like, it was oh so close, conference finals, game seven. I mean, there's no reason to think that they weren't going to come back the next year and be a good team.
And they were. They went right back to the semifinals.
The feeling was way worse when they lose to the Bruins. Way worse.
Well, because you don't think you're... Yes, and what I resent a little bit, we'll get to the calls in a sec, 416-870-0590, *590, get some tweets as well at Braden Walker. What I do resent about 2013 is the notion 20 years after this debacle... is the concept that, well, it wasn't a full season. Well, everybody's playing the same schedule. They deserved to make the playoffs. I don't know how it would have played out over 82 games, but they knew
It's not the point.
It's not the point in the least. And if anything, the Leafs' high water mark in 14 was going to California and winning 4 of 6 points. And then guess what? They started losing them to all the Eastern teams.
Right.
Detroit, Buffalo, Ottawa.
And if that season was a 48-game season, they would have made the playoffs again.
They would have almost made it this year. Chris and Chatham, you're on Braden Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Chris. Hey, Chris. Let's go to Steve also in Chatham. That's strange. Maybe they're next to each other. Steve.
That 93 season was the best close to the cup. It was a classic season. They had good players, good goaltender, and this last time when they fell against the Bruins, they didn't have that marquee player like Gilmore, Clark, Elliott, Potvin. The 93 season was more memorable than this last one.
Let me ask you this. So you are 80 years old, lying on your deathbed, and your grandkids ask you, hey, what was the most memorable Leafs game that you remember? Do you go back to 93? Okay.
Thanks for the phone call, Steve. Appreciate it. Yeah, I think he's hit on something in that The team was a surprise. It was a surprise that they got there. They were third in their division. They didn't have a great regular season.
In '93? Yeah, they didn't have a great regular season.
They were
season.
Starting to build, though. Yeah. And then they were. And then when the Jays were in the World Series against the Phillies in '93, the Leafs weren't stealing attention away. Not at all. But they started 10-0. They started 10-0 in the regular season that fall and brought almost the same team back. And everybody loved that team. So it's think about it this way: all the parts are there, all the ingredients are there for a team that you could ultimately fall very hard for. It was a surprise. It was a popular team, had a couple future Hall of Famers in Anderson and Gilmore. Andrechuk, you could make the case, should be there too. And it had a hot goalie in Felix Potvin. Nobody knew going into training camp in 1992 what Felix Potvin
yeah.
was.
The only element it didn't have, I guess was super crazy youth. Like you wouldn't get the same feeling like you do looking at, say, this Lightning team this year or the defensive core of Anaheim Ducks.
No, and they didn't have, I'm trying to think of a really excellent young player on the 93 or 94 Leafs, and I can't. Like Borshevsky had promise and he was playing on the top line and he might have had a 20 and 25 season. Like so but he was Nick Kuhlman. He was Nick Kuhlman from about 3 years ago. He was I'm underselling him. He was 34 and 40 for 74 points, but that was also an era where a lot of guys got 30 goals in 1993.
And that was the year, right? That was the career year.
Armin in Toronto. Stephen Brunt joining us in a little bit on the FIFA corruption probe, a little bit on the Jays as well. Go ahead, Armin.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
So for me, I'd say the 2003-2004 season when the Leafs made against the Flyers and they lost in Game 6 with the Jeremy Roenick overtime goal.
Do you think that's grown in legend just because they've missed the playoffs almost every year since? Like, I remember that game. I remember seeing it and going, Philadelphia's pretty good. Got a lot of guys in their prime. The Leafs will just be back next season. And there was a lockout year, but you're not thinking about that at the time. I kind of assumed the good times would keep rolling in Toronto for a while. Sundin was nowhere close to being done. Neither was Roberts. Neither was Corson. Neither was Tucker. They had a good core.
Yeah, I think everything's always in retrospect, right? And so you look back on it, and I guess that's the reason why that it does make it seem so memorable, because there was a lockout the next year, and then they didn't make it to the playoffs for, 10 seasons? So.
Yeah, and we're getting there. For a full season, we're getting there, 10 and counting. So, yeah, I also think you look at something like 93, and it makes it a little bit obvious that I'm neglecting to mention Pat Burns as part of the romanticism of it as well. But we talked about this with Babcock last weekend, where they swipe Burns away from the Montreal Canadiens, and the idea that Pat Burns would go up against Jock Demers. And I was at the game one in that series. We just happened to be lucky enough to get tickets, my dad and I. And that's the game where Pat Burns runs at Barry Melrose. Marty McSorley runs over Doug Gilmore. Wendell Clark goes over. It just and fights him. Everything was happening, literally. The Bob Cole quote. Everything was happening in a game like that. So that game, all those scenes have been romanticized, right? No question over time.
It's still the most oft replayed Leafs moment. Probably that and the Borshevsky goal since.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I was a very little kid. Lanny McDonald scores in 78, but they were going to lose to the Montreal Canadiens. That was dynasty.
And you know what? It's very...
They were going to get smashed.
It's very subjective. I know the Bruins thing will live on in unfortunate infamy because it was literally a where are you moment, right?
But do you think...
Not only where... Because the thing is about the LA series, it was always back and forth, right? There was never... You never had your emotions go from point A all the way to point Z. The Boston series, again, even though it was round one, I feel like I have to keep quantifying that. Yeah. It was a where were you moment, but also how deep in were you? Were you booking flights? Were you looking?
I think people were thinking about
schedules.
It.
Like,
it was
like
New
where?
York?
That's how close it was.
Well, I was looking at schedules. But I do look at Leafs Rangers, and I say, yeah, there was a chance to win that series. But how far were they really going?
Who knows?
I know, but they weren't. I just don't feel they were a moment away from the Stanley Cup Finals. Again, they won three hockey games that year in the playoffs. We're talking about a team that had already won 11 going into LA night.
The Devils went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
I know, but listen, let's face it. It's a special thing to do, and the Leafs haven't done it since then. I do think that the Boston game gets scrubbed out a little bit if the Leafs go right back to the playoffs next year and it doesn't end in disaster one way or the other. And they have it, obviously, in the 2 years since then.
It's kind of felt like one long season ever since then.
And several different levels of collapse, right? I mean, they were accused of collapsing in 12. They had an opportunity to make the playoffs and really didn't play well down the stretch in 2012 before they made it in 2013. So game six tonight. By the way, Stephen Brunton, a little bit. We mentioned this earlier, the big international headline. It certainly affects things here. Swiss prosecutors opening criminal proceedings regarding FIFA awarding the 18 and 22 World Cups. We'll talk about that with Stephen. Michael Del Col of the Oshawa Generals on the other side. Some NBA Finals potential talk as well with Golden State ready to wrap up. But Anaheim can wrap up tonight in Chicago, and we were talking about the Rangers' inevitability of probably winning Game 7, and it's great to get right back on the ice, not having a two-day break with this, you forget how amazing the drama in the third period was, the two Taves goals, Anderson backing in on the second goal with the goalie pulled, and then boom, no, Anderson is not tested in the least. It's a breakdown on a Brian Bickle dump, and Johnny Oduya gets turned around, and boom, 2-on-1, Anaheim wins the game. Do you have a feel for how Chicago just doesn't get put back on their heels often in games like this, and when they go with a huge amount of fight when they do get knocked out of the playoffs? What do you think for tonight?
There's feeling, right? There's kind of that gut instinct, and then there's just kind of like, what are you watching? I think most people are going to have a hard time not picking Chicago to win this and force it to Game 7. Why? It's because they do what they do. They were out of Game 5, and they still managed to come back and tie it up. And fluky or not, look at the guy that did it. Jonathan Toews scores twice in the final couple of minutes. I think Anaheim's a better team. I think Anaheim's been the best team in these playoffs. I think they've played almost perfectly. And I mean, they almost had their season overturned the other night, and it was only because their goaltender had maybe the first bad game he's had. I think Anaheim's so strong. I think Anaheim deserves to go to the Stanley Cup final. I think they've been the best team in these playoffs. But Chicago's been there, right? Yeah. If this was, I would go as far as to say, if this was any team other than Chicago, You'd just be assuming that Anaheim was going to go through.
It's hard in sports because you go, well, I don't believe in the Ducks because they haven't done it before. And the easy answer is, well, they didn't have Ryan Kessler before. And Lindholm's a year older.
Right.
And Fowler's a year older. And Maroon looks like I watched him in junior. I go, that's not an NHL player. Boy, is he ever. Is he ever. It's the Philadelphia Flyers wish they'd hung on to him.
It's like the new Dustin Penner.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Before Penner decided to
well, eat pancakes.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah.
It's not, you can eat pancakes, it's just the amount of them.
Okay, so this is good to know. This is good information.
Everything in moderation.
We're keeping our eye on White Sox, Blue Jays. Jeff Samardzija is working on a gem. There's no doubt about that. 2-0, bottom of the fifth right now with two out. Stephen Brunn is kind enough to join us. He'll be on Primetime Sports with Jeff Blair a little later on. He has covered World Cups. He has covered European Championships. We got home from the ballgame last night, and all of a sudden it started to trend on Twitter, and I'm watching all these strange-looking people get pushed into cars in daylight, and I'm going, fun, like raids, and it's, I said this to Andrew, it's, no one's surprised by this, it's just, no one's surprised FIFA is corrupt, it's just, why now? Why this push? We just always felt like, well, there's nothing anybody's ever going to do about
this. Well, I think there's a couple of things that, you know, which it, as becomes apparent, you know, the more you find out what's actually happened here. You know, laundering money in the United States is probably a bad idea right now. They're kind of sensitive about that stuff since the financial crisis, and they have kind of wide-ranging judicial and investigative powers in the U.S. these days. So they, if you do things like that, they can come and get you.
And extradite you back.
Yeah, and, you know, apparently Switzerland's not as good a place to hide from as it used to be because they will extradite people to the U.S. The other thing is that, you know, there's obviously some guys have rolled over here. You know,
yes.
The Warner sons, Jack Warner's sons, both pleaded out, but most notably Chuck Blazer, who used to run American Soccer, essentially, and he pleaded out and clearly sang to the FBI. So, you know, there's a bunch of stories about him carrying microphones and going into meetings, and you know, other bad guys tend to betray bad guys. It's kind of always.
There's
the way
a great
it works,
movie
right?
coming.
Oh, this
it
is
doesn't
fair.
Even have to be a TV well, movie. It can be in cinemas. Mark Wahlberg can be in it. DiCaprio can be in it. We need that to happen.
And there's some characters from fiction here, including Chuck Blazer and Jack Warner, who's down in defiantly in Trinidad, saying, "You know, come and get me." And but you know, it hasn't. You know, obviously it hasn't reached the top yet. But I don't think this is, I think this is the beginning. You know, you, with the Swiss guys investigating as well and cooperating here, you know, this stuff centers on rights deals mostly, marketing deals and kickbacks with FIFA tournaments. And it centers really on CONCACAF in a lot of ways, but you got to figure it's going to go elsewhere.
Is it possible Blatter has been able to somehow, he's the mob boss that just can't get caught, but he's been so smart, deceptively smart, that there's just nothing they can pin him. These guys could sing like canaries about him, but they won't have hard physical evidence that Sepp Blatter took a bribe or did anything of a corrupt
nature.
It'll
be interesting to see. You know, that may be, you know, it could be. And, you know, and a lot of this is, I say it's penny ante stuff, but it, you know, if you add it up, it's tens of millions of dollars. So it's kind of cheesy stuff, right? Like, you know, I'll get you this tournament and, you know, we'll get you the marketing rights to this tournament. You kick us back some dough. When we get to, like, I think this is going to lead inevitably to the Russia and Qatar World Cup bids. And that's business that was not conducted in the United States. There wouldn't be any way. But, you know, again, the Swiss part of this investigation, that's the big story. Or this other stuff is kind of the small prize, but the big prize would be to unlock what really happened with those two bids.
So what's next for Blatter?
He gets reelected on Friday.
For timeline.
He gets reelected on Friday. Then presumably he comes to Canada.
Right.
He'd be our guest the first week of June.
Could they postpone the election? Because there's a lot of talk about that with Luis Figo wanting to do so, but he's still running, he hasn't dropped out.
See, the thing with FIFA is, you know, you'd think that you know the European guys, the European powers, and would have hold sway in this, but it's one vote per country. You know, and the way that Blatter's always been able to, like a guy like Jack Warner, for instance, who ran CONCACAF, so ran the North American, Central American, Caribbean part of soccer, is that he could deliver all those little countries in the Caribbean. He'd deliver them 30 votes. So those, you know, and the vote of the Cayman Islands is the same as the vote for England. So, you know, as long as you've got a bunch of those people who owe you things for a variety of reasons on your side, you can still outvote. That's why there's never been a reform movement that's toppled Blatter, because, you know, he had all his ducks lined up in those places. And so the Europeans have been lined up against him forever, but he can't do anything about it.
We talked to you, Stephen Brunt's joining us in studio. We talked to you a few weeks ago about boxing, and we all talked about our own, you know, moral issues and ethical issues with it. I wonder if the soccer fan, I said this morning, I'm like, I no one likes this. It's, you know, it's dirty. When do Euro 2016 tickets go on sale? Like, everyone says, I love the sport so much and I love the competition that I know there's dirty stuff that happens, but I got my own issues. I'm trying to run a clean household. I'm trying to be good to my coworkers. There's only so much I can, you know, hold placards about and march about. There's not a real wave of protest about the Blatter era.
Yeah. You know? No, you're right. The World Cup's never been bigger and the game's never been bigger in the world. I think, you know, the suggestions of match fixing in soccer, the Declan Hill stuff, you know, that got a little closer to home for fans, I think, in terms of, you know, what if the games are corrupt? This is a different story. You know, the other thing is that, you know, the difference between this and the IOC, the Olympic brand was really affected by the allegations of corruption and the proven stuff, corruption around the Salt Lake Games, because they sell, you know, they kind of position themselves as almost a religion, right? It's like a virtuous. They do good. Olympism is a belief system. And so if those guys are crooks, then that kind of sullies the five rings and that hurts their brand, because it's not like people are really lining up to watch volleyball and taekwondo. They're watching the Olympics. Soccer, it's not the same thing, right? This is like the NFL. You know, we talk about all the things that could besmirch the NFL, but can you really kill football? No. So I don't, you know, does this hurt soccer? No. I don't think it does.
Yeah.
Is it just logical to think that this is the watershed moment and things get, like, it just happens to get clean? You know what I mean?
I think that Sepp Blatter, this is going to take Sepp Blatter down eventually, because, again, I think it's going to get to the Qatar bid and the Russia bid, and there's just too many things about those two bids. You know, sometimes crooks just get too obvious, right? They just get too cocky and arrogant, and they say, we can do anything. We can put the World Cup in Qatar. You know, a place where there's no reason to put it there except people giving us money. Let's put the World Cup in Qatar. And that's kind of the one you're waving the red flag in front of everybody saying, look, yeah, 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 we can do whatever we want. I think, you know, maybe they went a couple steps too far here.
I think there's still a succession of people, and maybe I felt like they got quiet about a year ago, who said, hey, it'll still never be played there. It's never going to happen. We're 7 years out. Back, you know, a couple years ago, we were 9 years out. Do you have that that inkling at all that and obviously the most logical places to put it are, I know France is hosting the Euro next year, are England, where the stadiums already are, England, yep. France, America, quite obviously, yep. because they missed out so badly. And they don't want to play it. The TV networks don't want this on in November and December in the middle of NFL and NHL and college football. They don't want this.
Meanwhile,
it,
slave laborers are
and that
the stadiums
that
right
little
now,
thing
right?
too. Yeah.
No, it's you know, on one hand you say you can't turn back. It's too far down the road. It's going to be too hard to do it. On another hand, you think how can they possibly go through with this? You know, again, if that's the next step here, and I really think that you're going to see, you know, of course, FIFA did their own investigation of those bids and didn't ever release the full investigation publicly, and the guy who did it resigned as a result of that. But I think that's still the kind of smoking gun here. And you know, and if that gets blown to smithereens, if we find out that indeed that was just a payoff,
yeah,
how can you go through with our World Cup? You know, there's no reason to have it there. You know, there's no, you can't say, well, but what for the great footballing tradition of Qatar?
No, there's zero.
There's zero yeah. reason to have it there.
How much more a fallout corporately do we see? Like, I know we already saw a statement of sorts from McDonald's, but Coca-Cola and Visa and, I mean, when do we really start to?
Yeah, you know, there were threats with the Olympics. Again, as the kind of comparison point, there were sponsors who said, you got to clean up or we're going to get out. And it's, you know, it's how many eyeballs are you going to get? You know, if the eyeballs are still going to be there for the tournament and if people can still suspend disbelief and, you know, watch the players, the sponsors will, you know, it's a money decision, right? They'll still be there, I think. I don't see, you know, it's funny, like the sport actually could come out of this quite unscathed and FIFA could take a pounding. You know, they're two different things.
Women's World Cup, you covered it last time out in Germany in 2011.
Yeah, I covered three of them.
It starts in 10 days. I can't get a feel for it. Okay, so we don't have the rights, so we're not talking about it. Not necessarily that we're not talking about it, but we'd be talking about it more if we have the rights. I get that.
The folks that have the rights are going to talk about it plenty.
They are. but it's also not in Toronto, so I can't get a feel for being in Toronto to think how big is it going to be. Will Walker and I walk into bars and games will be on? Will people be talking about the result at the water cooler in a quarterfinal, semifinal match? I've seen it grow bigger than I ever thought it would, Stephen, and yet I don't know how this one's going to feel, and especially if Canada can't do well and get out of their group.
It's all about Canada in terms of how it's going to feel. Like, they've sold a ton of tickets. It's going to be really successful. You know, there's no question. They're going to have full stadiums, and that's going to be great. Canada's got a group that they should get out of relatively easily, and then after that, you know, who knows? But, you know, remember, the attraction for people right now is the memory of London, right? And the memory of that
bronze,
the greatest
sure,
bronze
yeah.
medal ever, yeah. right? And the best story in London in a lot of ways. Nobody, and everybody's kind of chosen to forget Germany when they lost all three games.
It was kind of a low point following
the tournament,
wasn't it?
Right, it was awful, right? Yeah. As bad as it could be. So, you know, it's an older team. You know, a lot of these players have been around for a long time. That, you know, maybe a little past their prime, some of them. There's not another Christine Sinclair showing up. There's, you know, so it's, I think it could be great. And I think it could take off if Canada does really well and people will jump in behind them the way they did at the Olympics. And it could be a women's soccer tournament without Canada, which would be a whole other thing if they're not there.
Before you go, are you like me with Herdman? You just listen to the guy. He's incredibly inspirational. He's done great things for the program. Is it just inevitable that Canada soccer will make him an offer to coach the men at some point?
I wonder about that. You know, it's a different game, you know, and it's a different, and, you know, he would tell you that the psychology of coaching a men's team is different than coaching a women's team. He's pretty straightforward about that. And he's had great success. I would think they would like to keep him around. You know, the list of Canadian soccer coaches who we wanted to keep around for long term would be rather short.
Small.
So, you know, yeah, he's a great guy. So, but I hope that he comes out of this tournament with everybody still thinking he's a great guy. Yeah. You know, like he's a great guy, period, but is a great coach.
All the days for Bob to be away. You and Blair, it's just he had a lot of hard opinions on FIFA.
I wish maybe he'll come in on his off day. You never know.
You never know. Yes. Yeah. Hook up the ISDN at the estate. Stephen, thanks for doing this.
See you, boys.
We'll see Stephen and hear him after the Jays game on Primetime Sports in a little bit. Michael Del Col of the Oshawa Generals next will update you on those Blue Jays who are struggling right now at Rogers Center. And an NBA Conference Finals, almost mirror image for the records for Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James. We'll tell you about it next. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. on your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Michael Dell Cole, the Oshawa Generals, in a little bit. 5 points in the MasterCard Memorial Cup so far. The Gens are undefeated. I think it might have been Jeff Merrick that mentioned DJ Smith has won his last 11 Memorial Cup games because they won the last 4-09 with Windsor. They went through unbeaten in 2010 with that rocket of a team.
And now they're 3-0.
First time back, 3-0 out of the gate. So
does that
now
equal
he was
11?
An associate coach, but 4-4-3, right? That's what I got. Although, I came up with 9 first, and then I tried harder, and I got 11.
Although Kelowna looks... That was a good game last night. Kelowna's pretty good. Kelowna's a good team. Kelowna might have the best player in the tournament in Jarrett Seidel.
Yes. Yes. Picked, what, 2 spots ahead of Dell Cole last year, who's going to join us in just a little bit. New York Islanders.
Third and fifth, right?
Fifth overall pick, yeah. So we have, by the way, our TV viewers, if we can focus in on the logo being released for the 2016... NBA All-Star Game.
Oh, yeah. This is brand new.
They say brand new
hat.
This is
just coming out.
This might even be warm, and it was made a little bit earlier. Now is it phallic in nature? Yes. Yes, it is. Thank you. I'm glad you, yes, size matters.
A lot of things are. I like it.
But it's good.
Yeah. I like it. It's, it's clearly the CN Tower, and I don't know, it's not too gaudy. I like it. I would wear it.
I thought it was the Eaton Center. I've got to pay more attention to my
Nathan
Toronto
Phillips
landmark.
It's square. Yeah.
A square.
But the rule is, what's the thing with leaving the stickers on the hats?
Well, I don't do it, but
well,
do
I would hope not.
Well,
you're
I don't
not
know.
12. But it's getting older and older. Like we have a lot of here at Sportsnet, we have a lot of young interns and people just starting out in the business, and sometimes they cut audio or produce or do some social media stuff. They all have stickers on their hats. A, you shouldn't be wearing a hat anyway in place of business, correct?
Our producer wears a hat. J.D. Bunkus sometimes. When he's drinking Starbucks, he's got a hat on. It's utterly confusing.
Not today, though. He's getting very professional.
So,
speaking of our new producer, so after Michael Dell Cole.
How'd that happen anyway?
Which?
How do we get a new producer?
Oh, they just rotate him through.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it might last a couple weeks.
Can't keep anybody.
Yeah.
After we
We're
talk
so
to,
difficult to work with.
Yeah. After we talked to Michael Dell Cole. So, what do I love on Earth more than anything?
Country Day at the Jays
games.
That's
true. Okay, second
attending
most.
Jays games, chanting Gibby at Jays games. This might have happened last night.
Josh totally goes 3-for-4.
Yes.
No, I love I love doppelgangers.
Yeah, lookalikes.
It's
sure.
It's a good party trick. Speaking of our brand new producer, J.D. Bunkus. I found his doppelganger last night at the ballgame.
That's not his name.
I will tell you who it is.
Okay.
After we talk to Michael Dell Cole.
So, by the way, first All-Star game. This is cool. I want to mention this as well. Valentine's Day, right? Sunday, February 14th. That's how it goes at Air Canada Center in 2016. Will you attempt to attend this game? Does that because the All-Star game is, I always say, it's for people in your city and for kids.
Yeah.
If the All-Star game was in Orlando, I wouldn't go, oh, will you watch it? But going is not watching. And that's why tickets will be a big deal. Will it be the most sought-after ticket by far, more than any regular season game? Would people feel that way about it? It's still an exhibition, and there's no defense.
But all the stars are there.
All the stars are there.
Musical acts, and plus there's the, okay, so there's the dunk contest, there's the skills competition, and then there's the goofy celebrity game we do. Maybe you'll get to play in it. Or maybe not.
I don't see...
That's you know what I haven't even thought about it. Like, will I try to go? And I'm glad it's here. Like, I'm glad it's in our city.
Yeah.
I think in a roundabout way it's going to be great for the Toronto Raptors, and I think it is a great city and people get to see it. I don't know if I'm going to go.
I know. I had the All-Star game in the baseball All-Star game. I kind of regret not going to, and I was bidding for tickets. They were expensive in 05 in Detroit. And I thought about, would it be more fun? Now, I would say if you have an 8-year-old kid, what does your 8-year-old or 10-year-old kid want to go to more, the home run derby or the All-Star game? Maybe, depending on where you're sitting, maybe, just maybe the home run derby. Sort of like the dunk contest will appeal to younger people maybe than the NBA All-Star game will. Maybe the Saturday night is more the – it's not going to oversell the Sunday ticket. But there'll be people that would prefer it, put it that way.
Put it this way. I'm the kind of guy that I'm not going to be Like, I'm not taking a month's paycheck to buy tickets to the NBA All-Star game.
Mine or yours?
I'm glad it's here. Okay, sure. You could buy two tickets of yours.
Stop that.
I'm glad it's here.
Right.
I'm glad it's in our city, but I don't see myself going unless it's in a suite for free.
You never know. Keep behaving yourself, and good things could
with sushi. Yeah,
provided the creek don't rise. Jays are down 3-0. Top of the seventh. It's moving quickly. We'll get a chance to talk about it potentially after 3 o'clock. Our next guest has 5 points so far at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. More importantly, as importantly, his team 3-0 and set for the final on Sunday. They already know they will be there on May 31st. Tonight, by the way, it's Quebec taking on Rimouski. If Rimouski wins, you've got three teams with 2 points, and they'll go to the tiebreaker to decide tomorrow night who has that spot. The Oshawa Generals, of course, OHL champions, knocking off the Erie Otters. Our next guest was the fifth overall pick in the NHL draft last year by the New York Islanders. Michael Del Cole joins us on Brady and Walker live from Quebec City. Thanks for coming on our show. We really, really appreciate it. And congratulations on all the achievements. What an amazing 8-9 weeks it's been for you guys.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we want to talk to you about how things have been feeling. Was this a inevitable, how would I put it, extension of how you guys were playing against Erie, or have things gotten even faster, even more intense? That was a great series to watch. You ended it in 5 games, but have you even had to raise your level in these 3 games against teams you don't know quite as well?
Well, I think our whole playoff run was pretty tough. I mean, first round we played Peterborough, and they were a tough challenge for us. They played a defensive system, and then we went on to Niagara, which has a ton of offensive guys as well. And North Bay was a very, very big challenge for us, and then obviously Erie with McDavid and their superstars. We had 4 tough series, so I think that really helped us out in coming to this tournament. I think we played 4 really good teams in the playoffs, and obviously we came here and did our job in the round robin, and looking forward to the finals now.
What do you think of the Kelowna team you played last night? It was a pretty fun game to watch, and I don't think it would surprise a lot of people if that's the club you eventually see on Sunday once again. What do you feel about a rematch?
Yeah, they're a good team, but I mean, if Rimouski wins tonight, it's all up in the air. So, I personally thought Quebec was a great team as well. I mean, they got the home crowd, so that's definitely a big advantage. I mean, they have 10,000 screaming fans, and it's tough to play against them. So, who knows? Kelowna's a great team. All these teams in this tournament have a lot of star offensive players. So, we're gonna have to find a way, to shut down whoever teams we play. Key guys.
Michael Del Cole joining us. The Gens, by the way, 19-4 in their last 23 games, counting playoffs and counting Memorial Cup. What was the atmosphere like in Erie to play? We had DJ on before the series started, and he talked about the essence of shutting down McDavid and shutting down Strome, but it's harder to do when you're in their rink and they can pop them over the boards at any time and start the after an icing, keep them out there with against tired players. How did you do it?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, at home, we had last change, so we had our five group of guys there that did an amazing job of shutting him down. I mean, it's a full team effort, though. I mean, whenever he's on the ice, we had a guy kind of not shadowing him, but always within a stick length. I mean, he's that dangerous. But even in I think it was Game 4, I mean, he put up 4 points. So I mean, superstars like that are going to get on the board. But we just stuck with the game plan, and it definitely worked out.
You guys do have some star power, obviously, but still the lasting impression as you went through the playoffs and through the championship series and here you are is how you play as a team. And not to take away from you guys individually, but how would you respond to that? I mean, you play as such a cohesive unit, and it's got to be some of the coaching and it's got to be some of the leadership, but you've been a machine for a while.
I think it has to do, with the coaching. The style of play we play isn't really typical of, the run-and-gun teams in the OHL or in this tournament. I think we play more of a defensive style of game like a North Bay. And then we didn't really get talked about too much this year. I think heading into the year, no one really pegged us as being, in contention for winning the Memorial Cup. I think just squeaking in the playoffs, most people thought. So I think we turned a lot of heads, and, you know, our system's definitely working. I mean, DJ runs a really tight ship here, and everyone's bought in. So we made some key acquisitions at the deadline that obviously helped us a ton, and, you know, everything's working out.
Michael Dell Cole is our guest. Oshawa will play in the final on Sportsnet on Sunday at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. I want to ask you before you go about your goalie, Ken Appleby. The draft was, I'm sure, an amazing experience last year for you. He has yet to be drafted. Are people missing something here? Is he turning enough heads? And I hope he is. He's a great story. And you know how it goes. Guys get drafted. And I remember Steve Mason got drafted, and he was a backup and played 12 games. But not a lot of young goalies get early opportunities in the OHL. I'm sure you'd love to see this work out for him and turn into either a draft pick or a contract.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I still don't understand how he's not drafted. I mean, in my opinion, he's the best goalie in Canada, Major Junior. I think he's proved it all year long. You know, he's just a steady force for us. He's stolen us, you know, a lot of games. And even, you know, last night in Kelowna, against Kelowna, you know, he really held us in there and made some key saves when he needed them. So after the season's done, I'm sure you'll be seeing him, you know, get a contract at least.
Hey, we really appreciate you coming on. We're thrilled for your success. I live out in Ajax. Everyone's buzzing about you guys, and we hope this continues on Sunday. There's 60 minutes more to go, and we wish you the best. Thanks for doing this today, Michael.
Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate
Happy to. Michael Dell Cole joining us from the Oshawa Generals. So Appleby's 20, can't get drafted, but, you know, we talk about all these college free agents all the time. There's always buzz about some guys. There was about Tyler Bozak. God, who's the defenseman the Rangers got? And I don't even know if he's in the NHL anymore. Remember about 5 years ago, it was a big...
Oh, Matt Gilroy.
Matt Gilroy, yeah.
No, he was big coming out, yeah.
Yeah, but there hasn't been much about Appleby, who's got the size. He's 6'4", 205 pounds, but 20 years old and got passed over the last couple of years.
And if there's any position that we've reached a point where, hey, don't hang your head if you're 17 and... Or you don't go in the first round. It's you have one job as a goalie. It's to stop the puck, right? And at the end of the day, it's really not about pedigree, right? If you get to a camp somewhere or you get to a team and you stop more pucks than the other guy, guess what's going to happen? You're going to play.
It's a hard...
Look what happened in Ottawa this year.
I know. I watched Adam Dennis win back-to-back OHL titles in 04 and 05 and then the Memorial Cup, and I'm going, and the Sabres had his rights and they picked him really late in 02, 03 when he was still in Guelph, and I don't know how he didn't play. I don't know. That's why it's not a science.
Hey, I don't pretend. It's a weird position because I don't pretend to know everything about goalies, right? You watch a guy, you think he's good, right?
Yeah.
I think Pekka and Carey Price are the two best goalies in the NHL from what I see, and one guy can't get out of the first round.
So more Michael LeBron talk coming up after 3 o'clock. The Jays are down 3-0, still bottom of the seventh. Jeff Samard just pitched a great game. Give him credit. The Jays were hoping to win 4 straight. Looking less likely, but there's still innings to go, and they had a great comeback last night. So we'll leave the doppelganger stuff for after 3 o'clock as well. We were going to touch on that.
We can do it real quick. We got a minute here.
You think we got?
Yeah, we got a minute.
All right.
So I'm at the game last night. Josh Donaldson hits a walk off. He tosses the helmet, and my first inclination is, boy, that guy looks like our brand new producer, JT Punkus. And so what do you think? So here's Josh Donaldson, brand new third baseman of the Jays, and there's JD Bunkus.
Now, did you make him wear a Jays hat for
comparative reasons? No, he was just wearing it.
Just wandering around.
I think it's pretty close. I wouldn't ask him for his autograph. So I got yours as well.
But he hasn't got we need to get him to do the hair thing with the shaved sides.
Yes, shaved sideburns,
right?
Yeah.
And a little bit of floppiness with the bangs, potentially.
Do we have the other ones? Real quick, we throw them up there. See, there's you. There's you with the big ears. There's Ben Stiller.
That's reasonable. Yeah. And you are
a 1980s television character, Jeff Spicoli, a young Sean Penn.
Oh.
Maybe when I was younger with longer
with
hockey,
a wig, you can swing.
There you go, doppelganger.
3 o'clock hours next on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 360.